This is the December 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Dale Durkles at Grain Cycles in Bloomington, Illinois, and Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. Let's get a list of items from each of you that we might want to discuss for the day. Ellen Dearden, we'll start with you today.
Well, since the market wanted to talk about the new COVID variant being a clobbering factor on the economy, I'd like to talk about that and whether that is inflationary or deflationary.
Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles.
I'll follow up with that because I think over the last week or so, the most interesting thing that happened tied into what Ellen just mentioned, but also what Fed Chairman Powell kind of alluded to. And it all triggered a break in commodities across the board, as well as looking at what happened in crude oil. And there's some definitive signs in those markets now that we may have seen a peak for now.
And Jim McCormick.
Oh, I'll go the other way, Todd. Let's talk a little about the grains. Maybe talk a little about demand. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see the lack of carry from December corn to March corn, when we supposedly have this huge crop. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, let's start with Omicron and inflation or deflation. Ellen Dearden, which do you think it will be?
I think it will be inflation. And I think Fed Chair Powell's comments this week that maybe transitory is, he didn't say out the window for now, but he should have. It just seems to me that he was always trying to play the transitory card, as inflation is just, not going to be a big factor, but it sure is hanging around a long time. And typically commodities, and whether we're talking grains, livestock, metals, whatever, do well in a inflationary type scenario. Inflation is very cyclical, and we haven't had any inflation to speak of since the 90s.
Dale, you want to pick up on what the Fed chair had to say? And maybe you can talk about that in relationship to how China is considering easing in its economy rather than trying to tighten things up.
What Powell said this week and what other people along at the same time said, I step back from the fray and all I could think of was another individual in history, and that was Greenspan. And Greenspan, back in the 1990s, kept talking about irrational exuberance, trying to tamp down the stock market back then with words instead of taking action in the market itself. But I think this time around, the shift in inflation that we've had and some of the disruption that it's causing, I think it's probably having people take a second look at everything and go, maybe we really need to start addressing this. And the Fed had started talking about triggering their taper on their bond buying, et cetera, maybe a little bit earlier. And I kind of think that's a possibility. The other thing that fits along with this that really triggered my thought, if you look at crude oil and or commodity indices, and I watch the Goldman Sachs now, you go back to the lows we had in April, May of 2020, and we've had a real nice defined five-wave up wave, that fits in Elliott terms of maybe being complete, and we ended up with both, closing down below the channel that they had really been in. And so that suggested to me, even though, there may still be a spark and we might see still one more push to a higher high, but it won't be by much, and I don't think it's going to be long-lasting. I think this story is old and tired.
Wait, so do you think inflation is coming or deflation is coming?
I don't know that deflation is coming necessarily, Todd. I just think the whole inflation argument's going to drift to the sideline at this point, and people are really going to start questioning it, as we move through time. When I look at both of those, if they have in fact topped, I think at best we look at a sideways to lower trend. And so that isn't really something that's necessarily deflationary. It just says the whole inflation will probably tend to just moderate and top out a little bit and tend to recede it for a while.
Jim, I'll let you in this conversation whenever you want to jump in. Yeah,
I guess actually, I mean, Dale's camp on the inflation. I do think we're going to have it. I think we're, you know, it's not what's transitory. Obviously, they thought it was going to end sooner than later, and it hasn't. But there's a couple things that I'm looking at that says, in a way, it's a little, this inflation cycle we're fighting is a little bit man-made. The energy market's a big component of the inflation. But if you look where we're at, we're not even close to pumping near the amount of oil and nat gas we were pumping right before the pandemic. Not even close. We're pumping, what, about, you know, 11 and a half million barrels. We're at 13 before. OPEC is pumping 150 million less. So crude oil prices are at $80 plus before this Omni variant because they're holding back production to try to force the price higher. So it's not a shortage. It's just a lack of power or willpower to do it. And why are they doing that, Todd? Is it because back in 2019, 2018, for every dollar they pulled out of the ground, they put 90 cents back into it. Now investors want their money back. And now for every dollar we're pulling out, we're only putting 50 cents back into the ground. But I got to believe eventually the greed is going to kick in here in the United States as well as the rest of the world, and the oil is going to come up. The other thing we're seeing on the inflation is the lack of the Walmart effect. And what I mean by that is Walmart for the last 20 years has just driven the price of everything down. Anytime someone wanted to try to raise prices, Target, Kohl's, you name it, they always were fighting Walmart, who was always going that loss leader. Now that you got this story of inflation going on, it's a lot easier for corporations to raise the price and go, hey, it's inflation's problem. And where we're seeing that right now is the profit margin after taxes for non-fiscal businesses is at about 14.8% the last two quarters. We haven't seen that wide of profit margins in corporations since the 50s. So they're raising rates and costs as well as profits on this. And I got to believe eventually, kind of like Dale said, is you're going to see this and kind of stall out because Walmart is going to come back in here and start competing for that consumer again. And how are they going to do it? They're going to start lowering prices to bring the consumer back into Walmart. And that then we're going to go right back into the same cycle of cheaper prices as they try to draw a consumer. So I don't think it's going to last. I think it's eventually it will, you know, timing is going to be the hard part to nail down. But I think eventually inflation backs off.
So I want to come back to you, Ellen, but I want to put this in my mind and see if I've actually got this right. So what I think I'm hearing, and Ellen, I think you're on the, maybe on the opposite side of this, is that Dale and Jim are telling me that inflation maybe is transitory in this case, meaning that there were so many people trying to buy so many goods and in the crude oil play that they were holding back. So money was too much money is chasing not enough goods. So there was an inflationary and that was transitory in part related to supply chain issues and COVID. And you're suggesting maybe, Ellen, I think the opposite, that Omicron might not make it transitory. Is that where you were?
I think inflation will last longer than what we think. And I don't know if we're talking 6% inflation like we've seen in last quarter, but we are certainly seeing more than 2 or 2.5% inflation, which has been really the Fed's target numbers for the last several years. I think we'll be looking at 4% inflation for several years. That'd be my guess.
Differences of opinion, Dale or Jim?
I don't think it's going to, it's hard for me to pick out a number. I mean, inflation's going to, you know, if inflation's running at 3 or 4, but the GDP is running above it, we can handle it as a country. I mean, that's part of it. It's you know, it's also growth versus the debt. So we'll see. It's really going to do it. This Omni variant is going to change. The one thing you were talking about, Todd, I want to point out is you were right. The consumption. I saw a stat that said last year, we consume like 8% more than we did the year before. This year, we're consuming like 15 to 20% more than the year before of consumer goods. Because the consumer, essentially, instead of going out to eat, instead of going on vacation, he's sitting at home clicking on his computer and buying stuff for his house and a lot of durable goods. I also got to believe as we get through this Omni variant, if we find out it's not, maybe it's contagious, but it's not that mean and deadly, let's say, I think you'll see more and more people start going out. And as they start going out, that dollars, which is right now being consumed on goods, will start being consumed on services. And that'll also calm down the inflation, at least on the consumer goods side.
You know, there's another point here we all got to keep in mind and keep a perspective on. It's how we measure inflation. You know, we're looking at year on year, you know, and we go back into April, May, June, even July, you know, of 2020, when we really crashed the economy to bring COVID under control. You know, we really pressured a lot of prices. Meat and beef in particular is just a great vivid example of the whole mix of what transpired. And now, you know, we're looking at inflation, you know, at prices this year relative to a year ago. And so as we start marching forward in time, you know, that base price that we're going to be measuring in what happened a year ago is going to start to ratchet upward again. And so the apparent rate of inflation will probably moderate with that. In the very short term, I will say this, you know, and this is looking at the commodity indices in particular. Crude oil doesn't quite fit as well, but commodity indices have a tendency to have a short-term low around the change in calendar year, also around the 1st of July. The last one we had was a little bit earlier than that, so this one may end up being a little bit earlier than the end of the year. So what we've seen with the break-in here, yes, in fact, may be a very short-term bottom, but you know, the real question is going to be that first break we had, whether you look at crude or whether you look at commodity indices that we had here over the last week, was that the beginning of something that's going to be different going forward, or was it a correction? And I just choose to look at it because of cycles and pattern and everything all included, that was an indication, you know, this whole move up we had in commodity prices going back to the 2020 low may have come to an end for now. Now, eventually, yeah, I think it could go higher, but that's a longer term story we got to play with too.
All right. So let's talk about 2022. Corn and soybean sales in particular, in some form, whatever that form might be, because I think, given your views on what we talked about so far, there should be a difference of opinion, but I'm not sure that there's going to be among the three of you. Ellen Dearden, can you lay out your thought process on those commodities?
Sure. I am a believer that the wheat market will continue to lead corn, and wheat to me will make a significant high at the end of this year or into the first quarter of 2022. Saying that, I think there's good evidence that corn futures will run out of gas here rather shortly. And even if we're talking about fewer corn acres because of high fertilizer prices and or availability, we still ought to be pretty anxious about selling corn in the next month to 3 months' time. And I am really anxious to be sold out of old crop corn and to have at least 50% of new crops sold. And I think this 550 area is a place to get going on D22 corn. And I hope that I have a chance to sell some D22 corn higher than that. I want to be flexible. Beans, we could see, you know, things go either way, but I think beans have made their high for this move. I think we are going to struggle in here. If we see November beans back to 1250, I'd be all over that again. I've sold about 30% of new crop beans at that level, and I would like to be more than double that sold. I would anticipate that there are far fewer old crop beans in the country in Illinois and Indiana, and maybe even Iowa and Nebraska than what people are thinking.
Jim McCormick, 2022 crop?
Right now, I mean, our recommendation, you know, we're pretty much 50% hedged on the 2022 beans right around the 1253 level. We think they're struggling. I agree with Alan, to get anywhere near 1250, you probably need to catch, if you haven't made sales, get a little bit more aggressive on the bean side of the situation. Corn, we've sold a little bit of corn right on those 515 to 530 levels. We've started a little bit. I'm still a little bit optimistic on corn that we can get one more push up. I'm also in the favor. The wheat situation is so tight around the world. I got to believe we got one more push up. You got dryness in the U.S. plains. You got dryness in Canada. You got dryness in Europe. Russia doesn't really want to sell wheat. It looks like the Chinese have bought a lot of wheat out of Europe, even though Europe's not admitting it. So I think the tight supply, the odds tell me we got one more push up in this wheat market before I want to get really aggressive hedging wheat. Corn, we want to stay a little bit more flexible on. Demand is the real question on the corn right now. Some of our commercial contacts are wondering if we've got some sales going on that are kind of off books in a way that aren't showing up, that could eventually show up. We'll see if that's the case. But like I said, when you look at the market inverted like it is, we think there's a very good shot this crop's going to get a little bit smaller on the January report. We also believe last year's crop, this old crop carryout number is way too low with the way the basis was playing out right before the new harvest came in. So we're looking for the crop to get a little bit smaller. That may give us at least one more strong push into or after the January crop report.
And Dale.
Well, a couple of things I'll have to say here. Number one, when you look at some longer term cycles and in corn and beans, both of them have lows coming at the end of calendar year 22, somewhere probably in the last quarter. So as we go through time here and move into early 2022 in particular, you know, you got to keep that in the back of your mind, because those cycles are saying we got trouble out there on the horizon potentially. If commodity indices fail to catch and get any significant move going to the upside, that'll only enhance that a little bit too. Flip that back though, and you go back and look at the very short term. We bottomed, you know, in late September, it looked like, on corn in a short term low. Beans were in October in its short term low. So both of those still have a bit of an upward bias to them right now. And frankly, with the way everything else broke last week, you know, I think the grains actually ended up holding up pretty well. I think we've got a bit of a push coming here, not a bullet by any stretch of the imagination, but I see some upside coming into the mix. Demand, yeah, is going to be a key, but I think we also have to look at supply. You're getting more and more talked about not only what's going on with weather down in Argentina, but now you're seeing it. The talk start to emerge for the southern parts of Brazil, Paraná, Rio Grande, and do Sul in particular. And we've got to remember, not only are those big first crop corn producing areas, Paraná is the number two bean producing state. So, you know, we've got to acknowledge that, you know, that those crops aren't in the bin, although I don't think, you know, what's going on now has any long-term perspective. I, for a long time, have had a shot, and I'm kind of looking at the new crop December to give me a clue as to how to play the game, even with the old crop, because I think the new crop corn with all the fertilizer talk is going to be really the one that'll tell us the story. But I've had numbers that range from 575 up into around 590 on D's 22, and that's really my target for really getting real aggressive on sales. Now, I'd probably start sales, you know, as we move over the targets, both Jim and Ellen talked about there. So I'm not opposed to starting to scale up, but I know if we get up in there, we really start to get aggressive. Beans, even though you look at the new beans themselves, who've traded roughly $12 on the downside of the game in here for a long time now, and we get up to around 1280, 1290 on the top side, and we're just chopping sideways at this point. And I think beans, for whatever reason, even with the breaks themselves seemingly kind of suggest there's still another little push coming here, and that fits with short-term cycles. But anytime you get up over 1275 or something like that, I think you really start to game of getting more aggressive on new crop sales, and at the same time you're making old crop sales too.
So Jim, I'd like you to come back and talk a bit more about demand. Lack of carry in the market was what you were interested in, but just the fundamentals of demand and what you're really thinking might be in play at this point.
Well, probably right now it's just the ethanol side of the equation. I mean, anybody who's you know, has the opportunity to sell to an ethanol plant, the profitability is so strong right now. We're hearing bushes 10, 15, 20 cents better than they normally would expect for this time of year. So I think that's going to stay strong. It has stayed strong even despite the crude oil market going down, at least the profitability. So I think that's there. China's still the wild card, Todd, but I'm still relatively optimistic. You're probably going to see some more buying from China eventually down the line. Traditionally, we sell a lot of beans this time of year. We get through the bean shipping and sales as we move into the later part or the early part of the next calendar year. And we do think you're going to see that demand situation come in. I think the world, if you're our contacts with the commercials tell us, the reality is that the world buyers just have not gotten coverage. They're not covered like they were the last couple of years in corn or wheat. So I think that should continue to see some demand come to the market.
Ellen, how do you see the fundamental picture at this point? And do you expect many changes in the January USDA reports when we finally get there? And of course, we have a December WASDE to get through as well.
Well, the December WASDE will be a non-report for corn and beans for sure. By the time we get to January, there will probably be some minor shuffling, but I don't really anticipate there's going to be a big change in the 2021 crop, either on corn or beans. Perhaps maybe a scale back a little bit on the bean side, but nothing of significance. I would like to throw out, and Jim mentioned the short bought situation for importers of wheat and corn. I think the ethanol plants are extremely short bought of corn for the second half of December and also for February, March. And I look for them to continue to show some premium bids in the central Illinois area. I know this week there's been a flush of corn moving, and that's probably December contracted corn, which were called in this area last week. But my anticipation is that these ethanol plants really could put the flag out for second half of for corn.
You think January deliveries will be called in early by the elevators?
I think they will be, and I also think there's probably more January corn that's contracted that will come in later, especially if we would have some poor weather towards the end of December.
And basis levels have been jumping in central Illinois.
They sure have. I know we personally moved some corn at 40 over into ADM Peoria, and that's been a good market, and they've pulled back from those types of bids, but they're still the best, you know, the ethanol plant is still beating the river. Although the river's kind of perked up just recently, both on the corn and the bean side. And if you look at the Gulf basis, that shows that those crops are needed too at the Gulf.
Yet you're still bird in the hand is better than waiting, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Dale?
Well, you know what Ellen addressed there right at the end is true. You know, what we see going on here in the short term is, I think, more of a basis game than anything else, and that's going to exert some upward pull on the futures. But, you know, with the break we had in crude oil and commodities in general off of last week, you know, the big money managers are probably going to start stepping back now and starting to go, do I really want to be in this game? You know, is this thing done for the long haul? And I think we can start to see them start to play a more careful hand, and that means futures or paper may have a more difficult time moving upwards. So what we're going to see in the short term might be a basis game, and we'll see the cash market hold strong. I think corn demand, like both of them alluded to, is potentially pretty good. I worry a little bit about the bean demand side of the game. You know, the export shipments, although good, are not anything to necessarily write home about. I'm looking across the wheat. The sales shipments there are not anything that I'd necessarily want to get real excited about. And wheat in particular is interesting, given that wheat is, quote unquote, supposedly as tight as it is around the world. I had one fellow, we exchanged some emails this week, and he's with another firm, and we were talking about the Abari wheat estimate in Australia, 34 million ton. And I don't remember the percentage number, though. A huge percentage is a little bit off quality because of heavy rains they've had down there, but still, as far as quality wheat, it implied 26 million ton of a quality wheat crop, even though a higher percentage is going to be a lower quality. And I said, I'll take that any day because it's still wheat. And with that, with the wheat being a little off quality, et cetera, you know, that starts to flow into the feed pipeline a little bit, and the corn trade needs to keep an eye on that there too. So, yeah, things to me look good in the short term, but, you know, if this other outside game is starting to roll over and shift, you know, there's going to be a lot of question marks about how much money is going to be willing to chase these markets anymore. And we have to remember, you know, I mean, we're talking today, we're at, you know, close to $6 corn. We're talking today, we're at 12 and a half beans. You know, we're not talking like we're at low prices up here. And we got wheat, you know, there we're trading, depending on what you're looking at, somewhere above $8, you know. So, you know, and we've had Minneapolis wheat, which spring's arguably the tightest class in the world, struggling anytime, you know, we're up in here in the $10 to $11 range. So you start to really question, you know, how willing are people really willing to chase this game, you know? And if money isn't going to play the game, I think the driver to the upside is going to be hard to come by or hard to sustain. Let's put it that way.
On the wheat, and I don't know whether this really makes any difference, but last week I took a look, maybe it was this earlier this week, at Black Sea wheat traded in Chicago. It gapped lower and has just really been a horrible move down. And I don't know if that had to do with internal policies there or whether it was an indication of something that might be yet to come in the rest of the marketplace. Does anybody follow that at all?
The biggest comment I'll have to say about that, about looking at that Chicago contract itself, is that, you know, you're looking at a contract that is, quote unquote, a lower volume contract, you know, and so you really have to kind of question, you know, short-term moves and gaps and things of that nature, simply because of the value of the trade taking place in that. You know, and if you go back and you look at some of the FOB values here, where we are on wheat, you know, actually the highest FOB is coming out of the Gulf on hard red wheat. You know, France soft is not too far below that. Gulf soft red is close to that. But right in behind that, Russian hard wheat or Russian 12% wheat too. So, you know, all of this stuff is getting pretty lofty in terms of prices. And that's one thing you have to write about. And a lot of the sales we've seen in wheat out in the world over the last week, 2 weeks or whatever, you know, we see a lot of them up in here in the 380s, and I've seen a couple of them get close to $390 a ton, you know, but nobody seems to be wanting to really chase the market up in here as we approach $400.
Let's get some final words from each of you. I think Jim McCormick, I'll start with you today from agmarket.net.
Well, I guess my final word, Todd, would be, you know, be prepared for a little bit of volatility and uncertainty. I mean, we saw what happened this last week. You know, everyone, we went home for the Thanksgiving holiday and everything looked pretty good. The question in the financial sector was, will the Fed raise interest rates and all that? And then you see this omni-variant kick in and it just kind of shook the world. And, you know, my guess is we're probably going to see more headlines that really rattle not just the equity market, but the finance, you know, the energy markets as well as the grain markets. So like Dale was suggesting, you're looking at corn near $6, you're looking at beans near $12.50. By historical speaking, these are some very good prices, even with the high input costs. So don't be afraid to start marketing some grain here. Old crop and new would be my recommendation to people out there.
Ellen Dearden from Ag Review, your final word?
I think it's important to realize that we saw a lot of investor money in and out of this market over the last week's time. Huge declines in open interest in beans, huge decline in open interest in corn until this market caught and started working higher. That investment money is a huge mover of prices, and we need to keep that in mind. Be ready for something wild.
And finally, Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles.
You know, I don't have anything really to add to that. You know, it is going to get a lot more volatile now. I think this ease of moving upward has probably been put to rest for now. And, you know, we're going to see markets swing an awful lot with any little news that we get, whether it has to do with Fed policy or central bank policy in another country. Omicron, I think, you know, from the things that I've read, and I'm not a scientist, but, you know, I think it was overplayed a little bit in terms of the risk that we face. It may be more transmissible, but you know, it doesn't seem like, if you read some of the stuff out of South Africa anyway, where they first identified it, it's really all that dangerous compared to the other variants we've had so far. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But volatility, I think Jim hit the right word. I think that's what everybody needs to be thinking about going forward.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois, Jim McCormick from agmarket.net from Barrington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden and Ag Review in Morton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.